Ezekiel chapter 30, judgment on Egypt and her allies. This third prophecy against Egypt provided further details of the invasion which was shortly to be launched against her by Nebuchadnezzar. This prophecy, unlike the other six in the series, is undated. And there is little to be gained in speculating when it might have been delivered. The language of the section is straightforward, and bearing in mind the detail already given in our consideration of the two previous prophecies against Egypt, little comment is called for. Most of the questions center around geographical details given, and these can best be resolved by the use of maps. The point anticipated in the two previous studies, that Nebuchadnezzar was to be the instrument of judgment on Egypt, is here settled beyond doubt. I will also make the multitude of Egypt to cease by the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. This needs stressing because of the doubt expressed by some commentators as to whether or not these prophecies were fulfilled. For us, there can be no doubt. This invasion by Nebuchadnezzar was to be the day of the Lord on Egypt. This is a term not necessarily restricted to the time of the end, but applicable to any time of judgment upon a nation. For example, in Joel chapter 1 and Zephaniah chapter 1, there are references to judgments long since past. But Egypt was not to be alone in experiencing the effects of the Babylonian invasion. It was to be the time of the heathen. Or, as the RSV has it, a time of doom for the nations. The first map shows that these nations listed are, with the one exception discussed below, the neighbours of Egypt, who would be confederate with her in the face of an invasion from the northern power. Now, the map shows the Mediterranean Sea with a question mark against Lydia at the northeast end of the Mediterranean, and a Babylonian invasion, a big arrow coming down from the northeast and heading towards Egypt. The tip of the arrow is near the northern end of the Red Sea, with a question mark against the mingled people. And then to the left of the Red Sea, moving across to the west, we have Ethiopia, Egypt, and then further north, Libya and Lydia. And the title of the map is The Babylonian Invasion of Egypt. Considerable difficulty has been experienced by the commentators in explaining who are the men of the land that is in league, that is verse 5, who would fall by the edge of the sword when the Egyptians fell. The RV margin correctly translates this, the children of the land of the covenant, and there can be little doubt that there is here a reference to those Jews who, disobeying the voice of God, had rebelliously left the land covenanted to them and sought refuge in the land of Egypt, to read of in Jeremiah 42 and 43. Here is the reason for Ezekiel's preoccupation with Egypt in this series of prophecies. What happened to the Jews in Egypt was of very great interest to the Jews in Babylon, to whom Ezekiel addressed his words. Ezekiel was but reiterating to the Jews of the captivity the message God had given to the Jews in the land through Jeremiah. And as they saw the events come to pass, as both prophets had predicted, they would come to know that I am the Lord. Verse 19. Thus, not only would they that uphold Egypt fall and be destroyed, but Egypt herself would be humiliated from Migdol, rendered the tower in the authorized version of verse 6 in the north, to Syene in the south, her land becoming desolate and her cities waste and the land filled with slain. From verses 13 to 19, we have the desolation of Egypt's cities, and these final verses of the prophecy have to do with the effect of the invasion upon various cities of Egypt. Most of these have been identified archaeologically and are given on the map on the next page. One point that needs special emphasis emerges from a consideration of verse 13. It will be recalled that the plagues on Egypt were directed at Egypt's gods. So were the Babylonian judgments on Egypt. They would demonstrate the impotence of Egypt's gods, to which some of Israel had turned in fleeing to Egypt for protection. And Jeremiah had warned, the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, saith, Behold, I will punish the multitude of No and Pharaoh and Egypt with their gods and their kings, even Pharaoh and all them that trust in him. Thus, Israel's God would demonstrate his unique position as the living God, in contrast to the worthless deities of the broken reed in which some of Israel trusted. And there is an abiding witness to his omnipotence, for verse 13 states, And there shall be no more a prince of the land of Egypt. Already we have noted in chapter 29 that subsequent to these judgments on Egypt, she would be a base kingdom. Now the prophet makes the bold prediction that the royal house of Egypt would become extinct. History has been unerringly poured into the mould of God's prophetic word. Nebuchadnezzar allowed Amasis to continue as king, and after his death, Amasis was succeeded by his son, Psammaticus III, who reigned for only 6 months before being executed by Cambyses. And since then, Persians, Macedonians, Ptolemies, Romans, Saracens, Mamelukes, Turks, and British have ruled the base kingdom. And as one writer observed, each successive ruler was raised to supreme authority from being a stranger and a slave. No son of the former ruler, no native of Egypt, succeeded to the sovereignty. But a chief was chosen from among a new race of imported slaves. Again and again has Egypt changed masters, but among them no son of hers is numbered. This has remained true up to the present time, when her rulers are neither members of a royal house, nor true Egyptians. The map then showing the cities conquered by Nebuchadnezzar consists of the area to the south of Egypt, Egypt and to the south, up in the Nile Delta, the Zoan, and to the right of that there is Sin, Tafanes, going downwards by Beseth, On or Avon, Noph, and going further down the Nile, to the left of the Red Sea, in the land of Pathros, we have the city of No and the city of Syene. S-Y-E-N-E. Verses 20 to 26 cover the breaking of Pharaoh's arms. In this section, Ezekiel continues his pronouncement of Yahweh's impending judgment of the nation of Egypt. As previously noted, the prophet's concern with the nation of Egypt is more readily appreciated if the relationship which existed between God's people and that nation is borne in mind. Contrary to the repeated warnings from their prophets not to form an alliance with Egypt, Israel had turned to Egypt for help in rebelling against Babylon. Further, when this rebellion was crushed by the king of Babylon and Jerusalem was destroyed, many of the remnant of Israel fled to Egypt for succor, in opposition to the advice of Jeremiah. And this section of Ezekiel is meaningful only when viewed against this background. When this prophecy was delivered, Yahweh had already broken the arm of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, shattering the limb so that it could not be healed and rehabilitated to hold the sword. Verse 21, he would proceed to break both arms, the strong one and that already injured, and the Egyptians would be overthrown and scattered. And this work of judgment would be performed by Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, who was to be Yahweh's instrument in the judgment of Egypt. If the accompanying chronological chart is kept in mind, the explanation is straightforward. The arm represents the power of Pharaoh, with special reference to his military strength. Sometime after Nebuchadnezzar began the siege of Jerusalem in the ninth year of the reign of Zedekiah, Pharaoh Hophra sent an army to assist Zedekiah. The Babylonians lifted the siege and went to repulse this Egyptian force. They were successful and returned after a short time to resume the siege of Jerusalem. And it seems reasonable to assume that the humiliation of Hophra by Nebuchadnezzar was the breaking of Pharaoh's arm, which had already taken place when Ezekiel delivered this message. Although there is a footnote here that some believe that the first breaking of Pharaoh's arm refers to the defeat of Pharaoh Necho by Nebuchadnezzar at Carchemish. The reference to the Pharaoh at the time of the final overthrow of Egypt by Nebuchadnezzar as the strong, verse 22, tends to confirm this view, for Hophra, humiliated by Nebuchadnezzar, was subsequently removed from power and murdered by Amasis, who thus showed himself to be the strong Pharaoh. The chronological table referred to is titled The Breaking of Pharaoh's Arms, and there's a timeline on the left, begins about 587 to 588 with Nebuchadnezzar invading Judah, and the references are given for these events, which I won't cite. Between 586 and 587, Pharaoh Hophra sends an army to assist Judah and is defeated, the breaking of Pharaoh's arm. 586, Ezekiel delivers the message of chapter 30, and Jerusalem falls, and Nebuchadnezzar marches against Tyre. Well, those are in Jeremiah 34, Ezekiel 30, Jeremiah 52, and Ezekiel 26. Then at 585, starts a 13-year siege of Tyre. Tyre falls in 573. And in 567, Nebuchadnezzar invades Egypt. It's Ezekiel 29. And there's 40 years of desolation. Thus, both of Pharaoh's arms are broken. That's in Ezekiel 29, verse 11, and chapter 30, verse 22. A message was given. In the first month, the 11th year of the reign of Zedekiah, Jerusalem fell to Nebuchadnezzar a matter of 3 months later. Following which, as was seen in consideration of chapters 26 to 28, he turned his attention to the Phoenician cities of Tyre and Zidon. And Tyre held out for some 13 years before capitulating and accepting Babylonian rule. The long siege of Tyre must have sapped the strength and morale of the Babylonian armies. It was some 5 years before Nebuchadnezzar embarked on the conquest of Egypt, thereby bringing an end to Egyptian power. Or, in the language of the prophet, having earlier broken the weak arm of Pharaoh Hophra, he meant to complete the task of breaking both the arms of Pharaoh by defeating Amasis. In contrast, the arms of Nebuchadnezzar, verse 25, the arms of Nebuchadnezzar were strengthened by God for the work of breaking the power of Egypt.